Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
You're listening to the Moncrief Show. This is Susan Keogh sitting in for Sean this afternoon. You can text us 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. Email us afternoon at newstalk.com. You'll also get me on Twitter at Susan Keogh News. Now it's time to learn of the goings on around the world that hasn't reached our front pages. And our guide, as ever, is Jonathan DeBurca Butler. Jonathan, how are you?
Susan, how are you getting on?
We're starting in India. Tell us a horrific story that you're starting with. What's this about?
Yes, this is India, as you say. This happened in the city of Gaya. It's in the state of Bihar, which is in the northeast of the country, small place, relatively speaking, population of about 500,000 people. But a 16-year-old girl decided to run off with someone that her family didn't approve of. Mm. This happened on the 28th of December. Now, the family said that they reported that to police and that she didn't return to them, and she was subsequently found dead. And some newspapers actually reported that as well, and still are reporting that she was raped and that she was left for dead. Now, it transpires that the police don't believe the family, and it appears that after 3 days the girl in fact came home. The family weren't happy with her, and they went about plotting to murder her. Now, I don't need to go into the details of it, but suffice to say that they have arrested a butcher who is a family friend, and they have taken him in for questioning, and it looks like he's basically spilled the beans on the incident. So as of yet, the family actually haven't been arrested, but police are very suspicious about the part they played in her death. So it's something that, you know, we've spoken about before, these so-called honour killings, as they're called. And, you know, statistically, I think since 2016, there's been 69 reported, and it's very important to say reported, honour killings in that part of the world. But it's very much more than likely there's a lot more than that.
Really grim story. Yeah. Your second story, Nepal, is where we're going. This woman and two children, they died in a menstruation hut.
Yes. So this is basically, again, it goes back to beliefs in this part of the world. This is connected apparently to Hinduism. And it effectively is women for a long time are still sent out into these huts that are purpose-built huts to keep them away from the family home, right?
So during
the time that they're having their period, they're barred from touching food, touching religious icons, cattle, and men, and they must sleep away from other people, right? So this has been going on for years. It was outlawed in 2005, but really it didn't stop the practice at all, and it's still going on, as we can see, and sometimes it has tragic outcomes. In this case, this is a 35-year-old woman. She was sent out into the hut with her two sons, who are 12 and 9. Presumably, nobody else could look after the children in the house, so they had to go
with
her. And she lit a fire to keep them all warm, and as you can imagine, and she inhaled the smoke and subsequently was found dead the next morning. So an absolutely tragic case, another one, I'm afraid, but something that we've heard of before. And even new laws were brought in last year involving fines and jail time and that kind of thing, but the practice still goes on.
Now, Jonathan, there's some hope, or the US have some hope, on a deal in relation to the Kurds. Tell us about this.
Yes, I think the Kurds probably rolling their eyes at this one, to be honest with you. So, as we know, Trump, in his wisdom a couple of weeks ago, he said that he was going to pull out of Syria, take the US troops out of Syria. There's about 2,000 of them there in northern Syria, helping the YPG, who are the representative of the northern Syrian Kurds, basically. Okay, so they, along with the US, have been trying to get rid of Islamic State, and they've been fairly successful, it has to be said. But now the US are leaving. It leaves the YPG at the mercy of the Turks, who think that they are linked to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, otherwise known as the PKK, and who have basically vowed to crush them. So Mike Pompeo is in that part of the world. He's been there for about 3 or 4 days. He's been in Iraq and Syria. And he's basically on a diplomatic mission to try and make sure that the Kurds will be left alone when the US leave. Okay, and he says that he's very hopeful that there will be a deal.
Could be reached.
But I mean, President Erdogan of Turkey refused to meet John Bolton last week when he was in Turkey, as far as I know. I don't think he's met Pompeo. There was discussions with Trump The other day by phone, I think, and subsequently Trump put out a tweet which was yesterday or the day before, I think, threatening economic sanctions, which the Turks have just basically said, you know, whatever, you know, we've been through this before, your economic sanctions, you know, compared to the threat as we see it of the PKK and the YPG
are nothing.
So it's nothing, it's something we, you know, it's nothing we haven't dealt with before. So if I'm a Kurd and I'm thinking back to what happened at the time of, you know, the first war that the George Bush Sr. was involved in, I wouldn't be too hopeful, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that one plays out. In Algeria, you are moving there, Jonathan, for your next story. Tell us about this beauty queen that suffered racist slurs.
Yeah, so this is a quick story. This is Miss Algeria, Khadija Ben Hamou is her name. She's from the southern part of Algeria. Now, the majority of people, 75% or so, live in what would be considered the northern part of Algeria, and they look quite similar. This can be quite a tricky way of putting it, to put it that way. But they'd be sort of Arabic looking and lighter skinned. And Miss Ben Hamou is darker skinned. She's from the south.
South, okay.
Yeah, okay. And this is a big deal in Algeria, as it is in many places and many parts, many regions in this part of the world. So she's the first person from the south to win Miss Algeria, and she's being attacked online. People are calling her ugly, people are saying shame on you, but she has basically getting a lot of support because she seems to be representing Algeria's diversity, and that's what she's going on with. But I think what she's representative of is what some people see in the south of Algeria as being that region being neglected by the more powerful north.
Okay.
And people who don't look like them not representing Algeria, if that makes sense. So in one way, it's a good thing, because it shows the diversity of the
country.
And
she's going to go on tour to try and promote.
Yeah, she's going on tour, and she's going, as beauty queens do, they'll be doing charity work and that kind of thing. And she's going to go around the country and try and promote this idea and concept of diversity as well.
Now, a state of emergency is going to be extended, it seems, in Burkina Faso.
Yes, we haven't looked at Burkina Faso for a while. So there has been an increase in militant attacks in that part of the world. So if you think of the geography of it, northern Burkina Faso is bordered by Mali, okay, and there's an awful lot of, particularly northern Mali, there's an awful lot of trouble with sort of jihadists and extremists in that part of the world, and they're beginning now to filter down into Burkina Faso. So there's a region there called the Sahel region in the north of Burkina Faso, which is fairly deserted and lawless. So they're going in there and doing exactly what they did in Mali, which is try and exploit sort of ethnic divisions and the like. And they're going in and launching guerrilla attacks against the Burkina Faso military, right? So that's been happening ongoing for quite a number of months now. There was an attack last Thursday, I think, in a small village there that killed 12 people. So on the back of that, the government have decided that they're going to extend martial law effectively for another six months.
Okay.
So a worrying development, because, you know, you look at the situation in Mali, it kind of calms down in Mali, and then it blows up in Niger, and then it comes back to Burkina Faso. So these militants, they tend to move around and exploit whatever divisions they can find in these regions.
Okay, we'll go to Peru now for our second last story, Jonathan. They've lost their AG.
They have. They've lost their Attorney General. He's decided to resign. Politics in Peru is very complex, to say the least. So this is Pedro Chavarri, and he was appointed the Attorney General back in June of this year. So he's supposed to be there for 3 years. Only from the minute that he took office, he's been marred in scandal, right? So there's been all sorts of things, accusations around him that he's part of a ring of corrupt prosecutors who sort of peddle political favours in exchange for bribes, okay? And I don't know if you've heard of it, but this huge Odebrecht scandal that's going on throughout Latin America. So this engineering firm that from Brazil that basically admitted in US courts that they used something like $800 million to bribe government officials in several countries in Latin America. So there's about 30 million of it is in Peru, or it's probably not in Peru anymore, it's probably somewhere else, but that's where it went to. So he was basically trying to block the investigation into this corruption scandal. And to cut a long story short, he got in a bit of difficulty with the president. He fired two prosecutors. That didn't go down well with people in the country who actually took to the streets to protest. Imagine something like that happening here. And they had to be reinstated. And he has basically now decided that he's going to resign. So that he's resigned, but probably because he's now under investigation himself. So he's in a bit of difficulty. But it's a bizarre political story there. I have to say, strange place.
Now, we're going to a Finnish town that has backed a teen curfew. Tell me about this. I'm interested in teen curfews.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a town called Laitila. It's a population of about 8,000, and the council has brought in a recommendation. It's not enforceable, right? So children aged between 7 and 13 need to be home before 7:30 on a school night. Older school pupils can stay out until 9 o'clock, which seems very late to me, actually. But anyway, they're given a bit more leeway at weekends. So they can stay out until 8:30 and 11 o'clock. So it's going to affect about 900 students, still school going students. It's been supported by the town council. As they said, it's, you know, not enforceable. So it's more of a recommendation more than anything else.
But, and are they bold teenagers? Is that why they want them in?
I think that part of it is actually to do. Apparently, the idea was actually brought was started in a youth group there, and some of them were concerned that children were turning up to school and were tired, and they weren't
just
getting enough sleep
because they hadn't gone to bed early enough.
Well, exactly, that was part of the problem. So I don't know now if they were out, you know, drinking cans or anything like that on school nights, but there's no suggestion in this case anyway that there was anything to do with bad behaviour. It was more to do with getting more sleep.
Okay, Jonathan, thanks so much for coming in to us as always, Susan. And you can listen back to the podcast of Around the World on newstalk.com/Moncrief. We'll be back right after these.
Moncrief on Newstalk,
sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.